The ongoing confrontation between the White House and U.S. Congress will likely engross President Donald Trump's political attention in the months ahead. Given his central role in executing highly delicate negotiations with North Korea and high-stakes face-off over trade with China, the question on many people's minds is how the impeachment inquiry may affect the U.S. government's execution of foreign policy. Two most recent cases of impeachment proceedings against an incumbent president provide insights into what domestic and international observers could expect going forward. This is the first of two episodes dealing with the impeachment scandal. Today, we will be reviewing precedents set by Richard Nixon and Bill Clinton. With no further delay, from the Korea Economic Institute in Washington, D.C., I'm your host, Yong Kwon, and this is Korean Context. To talk to us about the Nixon impeachment, we have with us Soojin Hwang, who is an intern at the Korea Economic Institute and a graduate of Georgetown University Security Studies Program. Soojin, thanks for being with us today. Could you tell us a little bit about what exactly happened with Nixon's impeachment proceedings?
The Watergate scandal began on July 17, 1972, when several burglars were arrested in the Democratic National Committee located in the Watergate complex in Washington, D.C. At first, President Nixon denied any connection to the alleged espionage operation, and initially his pledge of innocence seemed to work. Around 23.5% more Americans voted for Nixon than for Democrat McGovern on the 1972 election. At the time, Nixon, despite his scandals, was able to achieve several foreign policy achievements, for instance, détente with Soviet Union, visits to China. However, as the investigation of the impeachment inquiry progressed, by late 1973, public opinion against Nixon started to surpass over those in favor of him.
So President Nixon, as the Watergate scandal is unrolling, is faced with many foreign policy challenges like making peace with North Vietnam in the ongoing Vietnam War, agreeing to an arms control agreement with the Soviet Union, and also opening up negotiations with the People's Republic of China. Were these major foreign policy measures by the U.S. government, were they slowed down or affected by the increased scrutiny that President Nixon faced as he headed into his second term, as more and more evidence around the Watergate scandal became revealed to the American public?
It inevitably affected the efficiency of the administration, especially President Nixon, to deal with those foreign policy. However, it did not affect to the extent to cause significant halt or shift in the direction of his policies, although there were difficulties. In the case of Vietnam, Nixon actually did not want to completely end U.S. commitment in the Indo-Pacific region. For instance, in one of his letters, he assured the South Vietnamese president that he had America's absolute assurance that if North Vietnam fails to abide by the terms of the 1973 Paris Peace Accords, that there would be retaliation. But soon after the United States and North Vietnam signed the peace treaty, there were some indications that Hanoi was violating some of the terms. Nixon wanted to retaliate, but Congress pushed back. Ultimately, no actions were taken.
But it doesn't seem like this is something that the Watergate scandal and the subsequent impeachment inquiry actually affected. It sounds like this may have been something that would have happened perhaps regardless of the domestic scrutiny against President Nixon. Is that kind of your sense as well? If there was already domestic consensus for withdrawal from Indochina, it seems like this probably maybe strengthened the case for it, but it doesn't seem like it was fundamentally shaped by the impeachment inquiry.
That is exactly what I'm trying to say. Watergate scandal and the impeachment progress did not change the whole shape or the frame of Nixon's foreign policy.
Now, conversely, because the president is the chief executive when it comes to armed forces and also in terms of foreign policy, there's often a suspicion that the president wants to use foreign policy to distract the public from domestic developments. Given these, not crises, but major developments, because there's also a war in the Middle East during this time period, the Yom Kippur War is going on in October 1973, do these foreign developments at all shape the domestic conversation around President Nixon's impeachment inquiry? Does it affect the level of scrutiny that the president received from Congress or the public?
So Yom Kippur War happened when Egypt and Syria conducted a surprise attack on Israel. It was important for the United States because that war eventually drew both the United States and the Soviet Union into indirect confrontation. So the war was not just about saving Israel, but it was also a kind of proxy war between the United States and the Soviet Union. And as the Nixon administration decided to make a substantial aid to Israel, the Soviet Union, as in reaction to United States action, signaled some intentions to escalate nuclear risks. In response, Kissinger, putting on an alert, Defense Condition 3, which is the highest state of armed forces, readiness for peacetime conditions. The day after Kissinger did the news press release, there were suspicions whether it was just a stunt by the Nixon administration to turn the impeachment proceedings to his favor. The case of Yom Kippur War and how President Nixon dealt with it, especially disengaging Israel and Syria, this slightly increases approval. However, it did not actually affect the progress of impeachment.
Would you tell us ultimately what happened to President Nixon?
Despite several efforts by President Nixon to make the scandal go away, in July 1974, the Supreme Court ordered Nixon to turn over the tapes, which later became the essential evidence that showed Nixon's connection to the scandal. On August 5, Nixon finally released the tapes, and in the face of almost certain impeachment by Congress, Nixon resigned on August 8.
Now, to tell us a little bit about President Clinton's impeachment inquiry, we have Rachel Kirsch. She is an intern with the Korea Economic Institute. She is also a graduate from Belmont University with a degree in international politics. Rachel, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you.
Could you tell us a little bit about the Clinton impeachment inquiry?
The Clinton impeachment kind of starts all the way back in 1994 with two separate events. You have Paula Jones filing a sexual harassment case against Clinton during his time as Arkansas governor. And then you also have Kenneth Starr being appointed as an independent counsel to investigate the Clintons' investigation into a company called Whitewater. And then this all sort of expands in 1998 when you have Monica Lewinsky called in to testify against Clinton in the Paula Jones case, and instead of testifying at the request of the president, she releases an affidavit saying that she did not have an affair with Clinton. And simultaneously, the Kenneth Starr investigation is expanded to include all abuses of power by the administration. And so in 1998, things start becoming more public, and Clinton starts publicly denying his affair with Monica Lewinsky, including once while under oath. In March, he tries to enact his executive privilege, and in May, a court rules that that's not applicable in this case. Then in August, he and Monica Lewinsky are called before a grand jury in the Kenneth Starr investigation. And for the first time, Clinton does then admit that he has had an affair with Monica Lewinsky.
And how does the House respond at this point?
Kenneth Starr submits his report to the House, and in early October of 1998, the House decides to go ahead with a full impeachment inquiry. And then the House Judiciary Committee takes care of it, but it's a very partisan affair, and it gets oddly expanded into including campaign finance abuses, and it's kind of a mess. But ultimately, after some weeks of deliberation, they accuse Clinton of four articles of impeachment. And then when that goes to the full House for vote, they only accuse him of two, which is perjury and obstruction of justice. But Clinton vows that he will fulfill his term anyways. And so at the start of 1999, that's when it goes to the Senate, and the Senate also struggles with it. They don't know how to proceed. They argue about whether or not to call in witnesses. And in the end, he gets acquitted of everything. And he apologizes for the burden he placed on Congress, but never apologizes for any of his actions and kind of just goes on and the inquiry ends.
Right. So ultimately, President Clinton does get impeached by the House of Representatives, but is not convicted by the Senate.
Right.
But during this time period, this is the late 90s, and mm-hmm. there are several international developments taking place, mm-hmm. Including, you know, conflict in the former Yugoslav republics, developments in Central Africa. A lot of different crises are breaking out across the world. Is President Clinton able to execute foreign policy during this time period as he's facing so much domestic scrutiny?
For the most part, just a couple of days after he admits to his affair, he orders airstrikes in Sudan and Afghanistan. A couple of days after the House votes to go for a full impeachment inquiry, he's personally mediating between Israel and Palestine in Maryland. And even in 1999, you'll see him lead a full NATO campaign into Yugoslavia after he's, you know, been acquitted. And he keeps having a very personal role. The only time he really ever experiences any pushback is from Congress in September. He requests $18 billion for the IMF for the Asian financial crisis, and they deny him that. But other than that, his foreign policy is pretty successful despite the impeachment.
Right, in the sense that he's able to push through a lot of these things
right.
despite the fact that he's facing so much domestic scrutiny.
Right.
And even the International Monetary Fund resource that he requests and is rejected by Congress, as you mentioned, was at one point scrutinized by President Clinton himself.
Right.
Because he also stated earlier that Asian nations, Asian economies should be responsible for mm-hmm. their own behavior. Mm-hmm. And that if there's a financial crisis, that they should take on domestic reforms before seeking assistance mm-hmm. from abroad. So it seems like, for the most part, things go unimpeded.
Correct.
One of the things that you mentioned was the airstrikes in Sudan and Afghanistan. Of course, this is the early phases of the U.S. efforts to crack down on al-Qaeda.
Right.
But at the same time, there are, of course, always accusations that because the president has wide latitudes in the foreign policy space as a chief executive, that this be used sometimes by the White House to distract people from domestic affairs. Were there accusations of President Clinton using foreign policy to distract from domestic developments?
Right. Sudan and Afghanistan strikes, that happens just 3 days after Clinton first admits to his affair. And to be fair, they're in response to embassy bombings. The embassy bombings had been several weeks prior. So the timing is interesting that they waited several weeks to respond. But again, like, military strikes take time to coordinate. It could have been coincidental. However, in December, Clinton also orders airstrikes again against Iraq. And these occur on the exact day that the House is set to vote on impeachment. And so they end up having to delay their vote by several days till the end of the airstrikes. Again, could be coincidental. Military airstrikes take time to plan. You can't always, you know, like, get the day you want. But it's interesting that Clinton's able to use these massive airstrikes in very close proximity to very pivotal days in the impeachment process.
Nonetheless, despite the delay, it doesn't really change the outcome of the House vote.
Right. The House still impeaches him.
Right. So if the executive was using foreign policy to somehow affect domestic opinion, it doesn't seem like the Clinton administration was very successful with...
I mean, not in getting him to not be impeached, but following Clinton's impeachment, he has the highest approval rating of his administration. So there may have been some aid in that approval rating by these strikes.
Because he appears strong
right.
in foreign policy stance.
Right.
Gotcha. Was there any changes in the way President Clinton conducted his foreign policy while the impeachment inquiry was happening?
I think you can see him taking some steps back in certain areas. For example, in terms of the Asian financial crisis, he really, besides requesting the money for the IMF, he lets Robert Rubin sort of deal with the ramifications. And Robert Rubin is the Secretary of the Treasury at the time. And Robert Rubin goes on this whole tour of Asia to all the countries that have been affected defending the IMF and their decisions in Asia. And so you really see Robert Rubin getting to step up and take a lead in this sort of economic foreign policy of the United States. But in terms of, like, the military and the diplomatic, you still see Clinton playing a very personal role, as he does throughout the rest of his administration.
So it is good that he had people to fall back on who were perhaps experts in the specific crises that were affecting the world, but he was still able, despite the domestic scrutiny, to still play the role of the executive in coordinating foreign policy. That's very interesting. Any thoughts on lessons that we can draw from the Clinton administration for the ongoing impeachment inquiry against President Trump?
So in the 1998 midterm election, which is happening right in the throes of the impeachment inquiry, the Republicans actually lose seats in Congress, which is unprecedented normally for the presidential party to gain seats in a midterm election. And so the impeachment inquiry actually has like a negative backlash on the Republicans as they do this. And Newt Gingrich, who's the speaker and who has really pushed for this impeachment, ultimately loses his position over it. And I think that's a possibility for this administration sort of flipped. You know, I think you could see the Democrats facing some pushback in the 2020 elections the same way that the Republicans struggled with their elections in 1998.
Right. And also, I think the other perhaps big takeaway is that Clinton was ultimately not convicted, riding on domestic political sentiment that seems to be tilting in his favor, which is not the case that President Trump is facing, given the gains that the Democratic Party has made in the 2018 midterm elections. So that is quite interesting. They're both facing very different backgrounds.
Right.
That's it for our episode today. Many thanks to Soojin Hwang and Rachel Kirsch for joining us. You can also find their article on the impeachment precedent at the Peninsula blog. We'll provide a link to the blog post in the description of this episode. We will come back next week with part two of the discussion on impeachment and its implications for the Korean Peninsula. If you're in Washington, D.C. on December 10th, please come attend our final academic paper series presentation of 2019 on South Korea-Russia economic relations in the new northern policy. We'll be featuring Ludmila Zakharova, associate professor at Moscow State Institute of International Relations. You can find more information on our website at keia.org. You can also watch the event live from our YouTube channel. Hope to see you there.